stretching like thunder. I see the spirit bursting out in a mighty flood over everyone.
Okay, that is United and The Future Marches In. And we start the last hour of our show with an interview. I'd like to welcome to the show Frith Robb, who has a book out called In the Shadow of the Shars. Welcome, Frith.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's lovely. It's quite fun for me because we had a guest earlier who was born in Sydney and now lives in London. And I was just looking and thinking, if at some subsequent point children or grandchildren research you on that programme, you know, who do you think you are? It's quite a journey in your life, isn't it?
It is. I should add that although you called me Frith, and that is my nickname, my real name is Persian, and it's Farifte, and that's what I published the book under.
Yeah, the reason for that is actually called professional cowardice. I didn't want to sort of make a stab
yes,
at
it. Yes, I know. It's been a problem.
I love it. So this wonderful book, In the Shadow of the Shars, what's prompted you to write it?
Well, really, I felt that I'm now a grandmother of 70, and I have 3 grandchildren and possibly may have some more, and I realised that none of these children will really know about my background. And although I have talked about it to my children, you know, we had 4 children within 6 years, so it was very busy growing up, and they've heard bits and pieces, and I just thought, I will just leave a 5-page record if I can just write 5 pages. I didn't know if I could, but it's the first thing I've written. So I just started, and at the time when I wrote these few pages, I saw an advert somewhere from a publisher, freelance, single-man publisher in South Carolina, saying, have you ever wanted to write your life story? And so I corresponded by email with him, and about 1,000 emails later, 2 years down the line, came this book, which once I started, I couldn't stop writing. It just came. And we put it on Amazon. It was self-published model, really. And with one thing and another, and local sales, I think 650 copies went. And I think it was just that nowadays, multiculturalism and people living lives between various countries has become a big thing. And also Iran is in the news.
Yeah, I was going to say, I bet the publisher has actually published his own book with emails with Frith.
Well, it would be nice.
because getting to the book, it's quite fascinating because there's all these strands to it. I mean, there's a physical journey, there's a spiritual journey, there's a double love story with you and your now husband and you and God. Where does it start?
When I started it, it really was, I started it as a record of my life, and I just thought it would be a family story. But once I started writing it, I realized it was also a cultural story, because I was born in Switzerland of Persian parents who were very pro-Iran and always said they would go back to their roots when my dad retired. My dad was working in the World Health Organization. And so obviously we relocated to Iran in the 60s, and I lived there, but subsequently came over to Britain to do a doctorate in English literature, and then went back because I had a grant under the Shah's government. And after I was there, then I lost my job in the purge that happened after the revolution, and eventually came over to Britain on a student nurse visa at the time that Britain was crying out for nurses in the late 70s. And so it became a very multicultural thing, although once I finished it, I realized that throughout this whole saga was a golden thread, and that thread was my conversion story, which took about 20 years when I first came into contact with the Christian ethos and God and Jesus Christ until my baptism in 1978, 20 years later, in Tehran, just a few months before the revolution.
There seems to be, yeah, I was going to say, you've put it much better than I could have asked, the golden thread, because there seems to be, in your life, that you were just in the right place at the right time.
Yes. That must be God's doing, not mine.
I think that was where I was headed, yes.
Yeah. Yes, you see, it really is the story of an attraction to Christianity from somebody who actually would never really have come into contact with that. And it was through various circumstances it happened. And my first real attraction happened out of the blue when I disobeyed my mother and strayed into a Catholic church at the age of 8. And there I just encountered a kind of atmosphere which was calm and holy and beautiful. And above it all, there was this figure on the cross, a huge crucifix that hung over the altar. And the face on that crucifix, of the man on that crucifix, was both inviting and very kind, even though it looked as though it was suffering. And I knew I would seek it. As a child of 8, I knew I would follow this man.
That is the most amazing thing. It's a strange thing that sometimes Christians try to play down that and say, oh, we're not about these images or
no,
whatever.
No, it's really interesting, because I think I've read quite a lot of conversion stories, especially conversion stories from Islam, and it's very rare for this aesthetic appeal of the Stations of the Cross and the icons and the incense-laden atmosphere and the chant to have attracted somebody towards conversion. But for me, it was obviously a huge attraction. And I think possibly, looking back on it and trying to analyze it, I think that God or Christ knew that would appeal to me. And that's how I was, approached.
Yeah, I touch base with that, because I remember I wasn't a Christian. I was travelling on a bus past a war memorial,
yes,
and seeing a figure of Christ on the cross and seeing the words, "Forbid it, Lord, that I should boast save in the cross of Christ, my
yes,
God." And
yes,
it's just the words of the hymn, and it just spoke into my heart.
Yes.
Something that really, just the extracts from the book that I've read and the
yes,
things I've looked at that touches me, is that you've had a conversion from Islam, but you hold a deep respect for
yes,
people
I
and
do.
A deep respect for cultures.
Yes, and I do also hold a big a respect for Islam, because unlike some very possibly evangelical Christians, I cannot ever state that all Muslims are going to hell or are not saved, because only God saves. And I was taught about God and about Christ through Muslim parents who were very broad-minded, and so I will always retain that respect for Islam and the culture within Islam, which is very Persian for me. And I think people in the East or missionaries sometimes assume that when you become a Christian, then the culture changes. But Muslims also think that erroneously, because, culture is very deep in the roots of both Judaism and Islam. And if you tell somebody you're an atheist, they'll say, "Are you a Jewish atheist or are you a Muslim atheist?"
I love it.
Seems you never escape that identity.
I am so going to steal that and use that phrase. That is absolutely gorgeous. The sort of subtitle to the book is,
yes,
Finding Unexpected Grace.
Yes, because originally when I published the first edition of the book, which was self-published, and we put it on Amazon, it was just called Unexpected Grace, because through writing the memoir and through my conversion, I suddenly was able to reconcile the strands of my life, one which was the Persian Muslim identity and then the Scottish Christian one, and they were always battling, and I was always either one or the other. But somehow through a cathartic moment after I'd written the story, I felt that these were united and had given me a certain grace, and which was unexpected. So I was keen that when we, Lion Hudson, accepted this book for launching under their auspices, they wanted to change the title. And originally, they took the title of Chapter 3, which is In the Shadow of the Shahs. And it was just going out like that. But I felt that that would, if it sat on a shelf, people would just think it's about the history of Iran.
Yeah.
And I really wanted the Christian element to come in, so I suggested they subtitle it, as in the first edition, Finding Unexpected Grace, and they put an Eastern cross on the front cover.
It is a lovely sort of strapline to it, because I mean, grace is such a lovely word, and it comes across the graciousness of you.
Yes.
and your husband James. I mean, that he would nominally go through some sort of,
yes,
conversion so that you could marry, and it,
yes,
could be seen as a marriage across two cultures.
Yes.
I mean, I think there are some sort of things that you have to hold on to as precious, and battles you have to fight with faith.
Sure.
But there are some things when you say, what does this mean and how does God view it?
Well, that's right. And, you know, you just never know what life is going to throw at you. And certainly the marriage thing, I mean, we were married in a church, but because I was born a Muslim and Iran is now a theocracy, that is no longer accepted under Islamic law. And
no.
When my father died, my mum came over in her 80s and said, your father's dying wish was that his grandchildren, which are my children, should be recognized as legitimate in the country of their mother's birth. But at the moment, you're not legally married. And that was a big problem, and it wasn't probably my proudest moment when we had to get the mullah over from Glasgow to marry us. And the first thing he said to James was, are you a Muslim? And he said, no. And he said, you can't marry this woman. And, you know, it was that was a big challenge. You know, in nominally he had to,
yes,
become a Muslim. And there was just no way around it, that we just needed that piece of paper.
But I think sometimes it's a bit like Naaman in the Old Testament, who sort of knows,
yeah,
he's come across the God and he says, look, I may have to bow down.
Yes,
yeah,
I know.
But you know, I'm my heart's with God, and I think,
yes,
I'm sure God understands,
yes,
it more than us.
I know. And I hope God forgives me if I wasn't, but, you know, we just had a split second to answer.
Yeah. I think something that sort of I sort of love about you, and I can't wait for the film to come out, although I don't know who they're going to have to play you. You know, I don't know who they're going to have to play you. I've got to try and find somebody with a Scots accent who's, you know, sort of Persian appearance. But something that is, you don't seem fazed by much, you know, challenges that come along, or this, you know, oh, I just think I'll sort of become a midwife. I just think I'll, you know,
well,
I'll take up the veil.
I didn't really choose any of it. I think if it had just been me, I was quite a mousy, shy person. And these challenges were thrown at me, and there was a matron in the hospital in Tehran said, look, you know, try and see if you can get into student nursing, because at the time student nursing was paid, and Britain's crying out for nurses, and that just happened. And then when I had my children, I had left obviously nursing and tried to get back in, they said, oh no, you've had too many, you've had 15 years out, you have to retrain. And it was a three-year training, and I thought, well, you know, I'm in my 50s now. And they said, well, why don't you train as a midwife, because Napier University in Edinburgh is offering that. And that's how that happened. So in the end I ended up with 3 degrees, all of them useless.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Yeah, it just struck me that, you know, that I sort of looked down at this, as I say, if ever they do get on to Who Do You Think You Are, and,
yeah,
you know, I think it'll burst the BBC budget in travelling to the various places. But I,
yeah,
thought, you know, you've got like Glasgow, Leeds, you know, Newcastle, places like this. I thought,
France, yeah.
Did you ever think of going anywhere where they speak English?
I didn't choose to go anywhere.
Oh, this is, and who, if you had a choice and, yes. and a chance, and you know, you've got a pile of these books, and I say, right, I've got the ability, you can put this in the hands of whoever you want. Who would you want to read the book?
Well, I would love the Archbishop of Canterbury to read it. I'd aim high.
See what we can do.
Oh.
But you know, other people you think would if they pick the book up, they would sort of find
yes.
sort of stories in it of, well, I don't know, God's guidance, God's goodness, His grace.
Yes, and I think my story. I mean, if I could do it, I mean, I didn't think I'd done anything in life until I wrote this, and I thought, well, maybe I've done a few things, but you know, most people, I would love. Just ordinary people to realize that you don't have to do much, but just have to deal with what comes, and you will lead an interesting life, and if you respond positively, and even sometimes if you just wait. Milton famously said, people also serve who only stand and wait. Eventually God will provide an answer or a way out, and I think that's been, you know, I've been fortunate to have been able to just sort of muddle through life like that.
I think it's wonderful because, you know, it seems almost, you say a muddle, and it may be that, you know, my wife does cross stitch and I sit across the room and I see all these strands hanging from the other side, but I know the other side, she is looking at a picture. And I think the picture of your life is somewhere there. I was going to say, they always say, you know, with musicians, the second album is a problem. Are you thinking of the sequel yet?
Well, James, my husband said he's going to leave home if I ever write anything else because he can't stand the stress over the computer. I mean, I would love to because I didn't realise I could actually write.
Yeah.
But if I do, then it would have to be something that would be worthwhile, you know, reading, and I probably the life was very easy because I didn't have to do any research.
No. but I just wonder if, you know, sometimes, you know, to point you in the direction of sort of a set of daily devotions or a Lent course,
right,
where
yes.
there's a thought for the you know, a scripture, but then you sort of say, in my life, you know, this is
yes.
how I found leading, this is how I found peace, this is how I found God, this is how I found, you know, facing up. There you are, I'll put you in the direction.
That's definitely a great idea. I'll work on it.
5%. Oh, I wish I could carry on, Frith.
Yes.
I just thank you for coming on to the programme.
No, it was my pleasure.
The publishers, Lion, Hudson Lion, and I just encourage people to go out and get it.
Yeah,
I mean,
thank you. That would be great.
I mean, in lockdown, people are reading more. Christmas is coming.
Yes, for the person who has everything.
Yeah, get this book. Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on. God bless you.
Thank you very much.
Your family as well.
I've really enjoyed it.
good. Bye now. Bye. Oh, Frith there, lovely lady, and a fabulous story. I do encourage you. It's called, as we said, In the Shadow of the Shars, but the strap line underneath is Finding Unexpected Grace. A real classic rocker here, Martin Joseph.